Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. We welcome to the podcast Hans Holzbosch, Creative Managing Director of Holzbosch Communication by Design.
All right, good morning.
Mumbrella Deputy Editor Robin Hicks.
Hello, Tim.
And podcast producer Alice Terlikowski.
Hi, Tim.
This week,
we at my tobacco company are introducing a total product recall, because if there's one thing we care about here, it's your health.
Getting tough on tobacco.
You know, obviously I love being in my kitchen, but I also love getting out. Walking from Bronte to Bondi, followed by a swim, and then a good old-fashioned milkshake.
Sydney's winter warmer campaign.
And finally, doing something about climate change.
So let's say yes, Australia, because yes is what makes this country great.
Celebrity endorsements, D-Dare.
Kellogg's and Zuji's new twists on Twitter.
Adshel's homophobia drama.
And a week in TV. Now, Hans, thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. There
were a couple of weeks recently where it felt like we were writing a story about you every day with new things that you had sort of launching into the market with Virgin Australia and Masters. Now, I guess it's one of those things you're probably working on them for months and then it ends up being coincidence. It all kind of comes along at about the same time.
Well, it is true. Masters took all but 2 years. And Virgin was a good year and a half. These things don't happen overnight.
What kind of brief usually comes to you in the first place? What is the process you go through?
Well, what's really important here is for us to really understand the objectives of a company, where they want to be with their brand, and obviously they've done a lot of research, and seen failures in where it was going, and they call us in to rectify it and indeed create rebrand or create new brands, you know, according to how they see their market developing.
And how do you go about getting the insights that you need to do your job for a specific client?
Well, our key is an excellent relationship with your client, and that's probably with all jobs. I mean, if the relationship is 80%, usually your clients get an 80% job. You know, if a client commits to you for 100%, they'll get a 100% job. It's as simple as that. It's like any other relationship you have. You have a relationship with your partner. If it is less than 100%, that's what the relationship will be.
And talking through some of the specifics, often what tends to happen is we'll write the story at the end of the process. A logo will go up on the website, whether it's a logo that you've done or somebody else. And the commentary immediately focuses just on the logo in isolation. I suspect that you would say that that's a very small part of the wider process.
I would say that's pretty naive and amateur to make comments like that, because you need to see the complete picture before you can make a comment. And in the case with Virgin, that's maybe what you are relating to. We are the creative directors for the complete brand. That means airports, lounges, everything on board, from chairs to toilets to carpets to, you know, and so on. And then, of course, you know, the delivery. And then, of course, and I'm never forgetting the international component of what that brand's all about. So, no, it's not just about one logo. That's, like, ridiculous to think that way.
And you're also, I think it's the first time I've seen somebody from an agency appear in the ad as well.
Oh, my God.
How did that come
did
about?
Did you think I looked all right?
Absolutely.
I think to a certain extent, one had to be quite eagle-eyed to spot you, didn't they? Yeah. How did that come about? Was that just a bit of fun late in the process? Or?
No, I mean, I actually thought that was very clever of Virgin to recognize.
To have you in their ads.
Yeah. But to recognize the people that have worked so hard behind the scenes. And who really have made, just not me, but not only me, but lots of other people in there, to recognize them for what they've done on the brand. And I think it was a, you know, like almost like a thank you for doing what we've done. You know, it's fantastic.
Hans, can I just ask you, you were talking earlier on about relationships. I was interested in the relationship you guys had with M&C Saatchi, which is obviously the guys that are going to roll out the Masters brand. Mm. What interests me is the tension between the ad agency and the brand agency in terms of who owns the brand strategy. Increasingly, it's branding shops, branding agencies like yourselves. How do you manage that relationship between yourselves and the ad agency?
Well, our relationships, really. But what I really mean is that there is no tension between us and M&C Saatchi on Masters and between us and Virgin with Clemenger. Mm. We've really worked out the parameters of how we work together.
Yeah.
And as long as we stick with those, we're fine.
But the interesting thing was that you guys were working with the CEO of Woolworths, of Masters,
yeah,
from a very early stage.
Correct.
M&C Saatchi was working on the brand at a later stage, asked after you guys had put together the brand architecture.
Correct.
So I would imagine that M&C would, you know, it used to be the case that advertising agencies would own everything, own the brand right down through to the execution.
Yes, but what is actually happening is today, advertising agencies do not have the expertise they may have used to have a long time ago. That's why big companies go to specialist branding agencies.
Yes.
Agencies are good at advertising.
Yes.
And they're brilliant at advertising, but they may not be so good at branding.
Yes. Yeah, mind you, wrote a story yesterday, Tim, I'm not sure if you remember, yep, Newington College, a rebrand, McCann Erickson handled that. And I put that question to Chris Mort. So did Future Brand, did they come up with the brand strategy? He said, no, we did everything from start to finish. So there's still, it seems to me, in the market, quite a variety. So on one hand, brand agencies sometimes do the brand, and on the other hand, agencies, ad agencies handle it.
Yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is that advertising plays a big role in my company. For instance, Royal Caribbean Cruises is a very large advertising client.
Yeah.
And I love dabbling into retail advertising because it's fast, it's quick, you have to think, you know, on your feet. I love that part of the business. Mm. So it's not only advertising agencies that dabble in branding, but it's branding agencies that dabble in advertising.
Yes, yeah.
And why not? Because it gives you it really grounds you as a business,
yes,
to be amongst all the disciplines.
Yes.
And I think it's a good thing.
Can I just ask about the creation of a brand? I was talking to Richard Curtis, who's general manager over at Interbrand. He said that these days, well, it used to be the case that brands were built to last. Now they're built to change. I just wonder what you thought of that. Presumably Masters has an inbuilt sort of flexibility that allows it to change and adapt over time.
I think what he's really saying is that it's both.
Right.
You know, and as always has been both. I don't know why it's not a revelation what he's saying here. It is absolutely both, because a brand needs to change with the times. Otherwise it becomes irrelevant.
Yes.
And you know, you look at Shell or look at BP or look at all these major Coca-Cola that have been out there. Mm. They've all changed.
I was going
over time. So I mean, it's nothing new. Mm. I mean, it's always been like that.
Yeah. Funny enough, I was going to ask you. Do you find yourself walking around and looking at brands and thinking that's a brand that really they need to do something with that? I'd love to get my hands on that.
Tim, a classic case is Qantas. And it's exactly what we did for Qantas with the introduction of the A380 and the Dreamliner that's coming up. Exactly that. I was involved in the original design, and we redesigned the Qantas identity only a few years ago, and I would see Masters or even Virgin that would all kind of evolve in, you know, it may last 20, 30 years, but eventually it'll evolve to because it's like anything. You need to change to stay relevant to your market.
What are the work you're proud of from the last few years?
All of them.
I love all of your children equally.
It's such a joy. And it's only really a joy because I would say for the last 20 years I've been hitting my head against a brick wall rebranding because it has never been taken as serious as it is today. But I've just been persevering. And it's only really the last 5 years that suddenly it's come to the forefront and suddenly we've taken center stage in the way a business looks at how to connect with our customers.
And talk me through some of your key projects for the last 5 years then.
Well, I would say, you know, Qantas is probably a major one. So is Virgin, of course, we just relaunched. We're doing AMP at the moment.
Woolworths.
Oh, Woolworths. There's so many. Even in Woolworths itself, you know, there's so many projects that we work on, which are all so exciting.
And I remember with the Woolworths one, I can't remember if this was what you said or whether it was people theorising, the idea that it actually looks a bit like a sort of fresh apple as well, the logo. Is that where people just read too much into what they're seeing, or actually a kind of a double meaning or a visual clue is something that you would always seek?
I believe there's a lot more to it. I mean, the color plays a major role, you know, the green of freshness and, you know, even the shapes. I mean, the feminine shapes really in that logo, which is really important because mostly females shopping at Woolies. But also, talking about an apple, it started never like that, although people say it kind of is a little bit. But I actually put 20 different vegetables and fruits on the table, and that's how I designed that logo. I mean, I think it probably looks more like a melon than an apple or an orange or a, you know. So what I was really trying to communicate is fresh food. You know, and that's an absolute key to the job. And that, because what I really try to do is express the fresh food people in a single image.
Just on, Hans, last time we spoke, it was at the Virgin Australia launch. Since that time, that was a month ago now, how have you seen the brand roll out? Are you happy with it? Is there something that you'd like to change and get in and say, look, oh, I wish we had kind of approached that differently or done that a bit differently?
Currently, I'm just sitting back a little bit, I must say, and just listen to what the consumers have to say about it. Because ultimately, the brand is going to be successful if their customers are going to rave about it. Okay, and I'm just kind of sitting back waiting to and probably adjust in a few months' time if something needs to be adjusted. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other projects we're focusing on at the moment. For instance, V Australia is also changing to Virgin Australia, mm-hmm. as you know. And currently I'm really busy working in Europe with manufacturers, seed manufacturers, to really change that part of the brand. Mm-hmm. And it's so challenging and so interesting because there's so many restrictions that we need to work with because safety, of course, always number one. So whatever we do needs to be checked and double checked. And it's a great challenge because you still need to come up with a great job. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really, it's fantastic. I love it.
And what's the starting point? Do you... You get the brief, you talk to the. Do you at some point sit down with a blank piece of paper and start sketching? That's one of those starting points.
Yeah, always.
With vegetables in front of you.
With vegetables in front of me, yes. But no, always, because my feeling is, better that's old fashioned or not, but I have something in my head and I can sketch that so quickly. If I go on a computer, it takes me too long because my mind's racing when I'm sketching and I want to very quickly put that down on paper. Well, I can't do that on a computer. I'm totally useless on a computer and I always have to have someone with me to do it for me. So it's a real problem. But with sketching, it just happens. It goes very quick. And,
With the Virgin rebrand, how closely involved was Richard Branson? Because obviously there's been a sort of notion that over a number of years that Richard Branson sort of is the Virgin brand to a large extent. How involved was he? Was he looking over your shoulder?
No, he doesn't look over my shoulder.
He wasn't running the computer for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really John Borghetti. He is the one who is in charge of changing that brand.
Right.
And he is the one with the vision.
Yes.
He has to convince Richard Branson that the change needs to be made for Virgin to grow up as a brand.
Was there a resistance then from Richard Branson?
Never.
Right.
He understood right from the start what it was all about. And it was really John's vision that he articulated, got approval from the board to move forward with these changes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really what it's come about. Of course, Mr. Branson stays in touch as it goes. But I understood that these two guys were making bets whether John could actually deliver. And as you know, he has.
Right.
And it's fascinating how that works at that level.
And in terms of your peers, either here in Australia or globally, who are the people that you respect working in the same space as you?
Well, you know, the one company that I admire really the most, and they keep doing the goods every time, is Wolf Olins in Great Britain. I mean, these guys just keep doing it. Every time they make a bold statement, they change, they adjust, they just know how to go about it, and it's absolutely brilliant the way they do it. You know, and unlike a lot of agencies here, I believe there's no real account management here, right? There are strategists and there are designers, and the two of them work it out and they present it to a client, and it's a very interesting dynamic. And in my company, we are doing the same thing. And it's a fascinating world, you know, because, everything is discussed, talked about in depth, and then move on and, you know, see where we can answer a client's brief, you know.
And presumably clients, if they were talking to you about potentially working for them, the other people sort of in that space, it'll be what, the people like Frost Design, those sort of people. Would you find yourself on the same list as them? Or are they more design?
I think they're more design. Vince Frost is a typographer, I believe.
He is. So, that's his passion, yeah.
Yeah, so no, he wouldn't be in the... I mean, the times that I get involved in a brand, people like that would never get asked. So I kind of maybe work more, if there was ever a pitch, which is rarely anyway, it would be more Landor and Future Brand and those kind of companies.
If you were to rebrand Mumbrella, what would you do?
I would probably design an umbrella and somehow work the M of mum in there. That's one way. The other thing is I could really design a mum. And visualize a mum and then put the umbrella afterwards.
I'm picturing Tim in a dress right now.
So. I've told you to stop picturing that sort of thing.
Sorry, that'll be $50,000, thank you.
That's how it works. Well, thank you for our free consultation.
Yeah. Oh, is it free, was it? Oh, right, okay.
Next, we talk getting tough on tobacco.
To advertise with one of the top 10 most loved brands in Australia, visit advertise.ebay.com.au.
So the Cancer Council has revived a TV ad from 2002, which focuses on the motives of tobacco companies. Let's have a listen.
As you may know, cigarettes have been linked to cancer, addiction, emphysema, heart disease and premature death. And as a result, we at My Tobacco Company are introducing a total product recall. All of our product will be withdrawn from sale wherever it is in Australia, until we can guarantee that it poses absolutely no threat to your health. Because if there's one thing we care about here, it's your health.
The man featured in the ad was a satirist playing a head honcho of a tobacco firm. The revival of the campaign has followed debate on Mumbrella about whether enforcing the plain packaging bill for cigarette packets is brand theft. So Hans, quite a timely occasion for a brand expert to be on the podcast. What are your views on this?
Well, be honest, I'm very concerned about governments interfering in brand. Because where does that go to? You know, are they next stopping labels on beer bottles or coffee packs? You know, I mean anything that's slightly dangerous to your health, what's going to happen with that in the long term, right? What is actually what I'm my most biggest concern is that governments are interfering in people making up their own mind.
Right.
Okay, and that to me is a really big thing, because people have an independent position. That is that they can do that. Well, so what do we actually want our government to be? Because it sounds to me like we're becoming a nanny state.
Right.
Okay, so soon we don't have to make up our minds anymore. The government will do that for us. Wrong. Because, you know, in a democracy, the way we live, we have a voice. And we can, you know, my solution would be to fivefold the price of a cigarette pack and use that money to educate.
Right.
You know, in not only education, but hospitals to, you know, to me, that's where that money needs to be. That's how it should be done. Taking a brand off the pack, it's a little bit like the prohibition in America, right? Where the government failed big time. I really don't believe that it's going to make a huge difference.
Mm. So if you were responsible for introducing a new cigarette brand, tobacco brand, to Australia, what would your approach be?
Well, I wouldn't, because I wouldn't work for cigarette companies personally.
Right.
And I've always resisted it.
Right.
If I would, I would keep it very, very simple, very clean, and probably I would use a lot of white, because we're going that way anyway. So I would very subtly introduce a brand name on a white pack.
Right.
Go
ahead, Hans.
So if Hans, you're saying government are interfering with us making our own decisions, if the government continues to go along this way of blocking brands from doing this, does that mean, say, junk food companies who are advertising to children will be tobacco brands of tomorrow?
Alice, it's such a good point, right? Because that's next, okay? So what's going to happen, right? So we're eating junk food, right? What are we going to do? We're going to say now, no more advertising for junk food, and soon no more advertising for coffee. And so what does it mean? Where does that go? And if you restrict one, well, why don't you restrict all of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of interesting sort of conspiracy theories about how tobacco firms these days are actually allowed to market at all. Hmm. I remember visiting Leo Burnett in Malaysia, and they were showing me their ads for Marlboro. They're print ads. There's no branding at all to be seen, apart from the colour. All they're allowed to use was the Marlboro Red. I just wondered what sort of room for manoeuvre a tobacco firm has and what actually they're capable of doing. Again, if your brief was a tobacco firm, what could you get away with? What could you do?
In this market, it's very little now, isn't it? You know, in terms of above the line advertising, you know, anything that I think is funded by a tobacco company, they can't. You know, so the Silk Cut in the UK was another one, wasn't it? Where they just used the purple,
For Marlboro. You know, maybe you can get away with just the M. That may be just enough for you to recognize it and you know, move on.
Yeah. So Tim, what did you make of the ad? It's 9 years old.
The cancer ad. Good strategy, bringing it back now. You know, it's being talked about. You've got suddenly this stuff coming out in the papers at the moment from the tobacco lobbyists. It's a good time to just remind people of the health message. I don't think they need a new creative. I thought that worked very, very well, and I suspect people are unfamiliar with it. So, you know, effective ad, I thought.
If there was criticism, people are saying, well, it's quite a quirky ad, quite funny. People aren't going to quit smoking watching that. I just wonder if any of you guys thought that if you were smokers watching that, would it make you give up?
I've never been a smoker, so it's actually really hard to see to understand the motivations, because it's one of those things that... clearly there's something in people that does, but I just think they're strange for smoking in the first place. So it's...
And I wonder now whether, I mean, this I can't speak to Cancer Council, but whether their motivation is a preventative measure rather than stopping those who are completely and 100% addicted. You know, there's my parents' age are the ones that are addicted because they started smoking before these messages were out, and it's like, you don't want to give up on these people, but it's going to be a lot harder to convince them. Perhaps the children, the teenagers that are watching it, is what they're really aiming for.
Yeah. So next, Sydney's Winter Warmer campaign.
Tourism New South Wales and Ogilvy Sydney have launched a collection of ads to help promote Sydney as a domestic winter holiday destination. Let's take a listen to celebrity chef Matt Moran spruiking the harbour city.
You know, obviously I love being in my kitchen, but I also love getting out. Walking from Bronte to Bondi, followed by a swim, and then a good old-fashioned milkshake. That's what makes Sydney so Sydney.
Now, one of the things he's advocating is swimming in the pool at
Bondi icebergs in the winter, which, frankly, I don't fancy. It was one of 8 TV ads featuring a mix of famous cultured people as well as locations, part of a wider international and domestic campaign named It's What Makes Sydney So Sydney. Now, Alice, you tend to wear the travel and tourism hat for us as our specialist in that department. Appropriate for the domestic market, do you think?
Sure, domestic market. Sydney siders, out of, you know, interstaters, that's who they're targeting, yep. But it's as if they're living in a different climate because it's, as you said, Matt Moran's wearing boardies, drinking milkshake and Bondi. Fantastic if it's October, November. It's June and this is trying to, you know, convince people to come here for that. So I'm not convinced. I like the approach in terms of trying to get domestic visitors, but I just think the timing's all wrong.
Now, Hans, we've talked about some of the brands that you've worked with already, sort of travel and tourism brands like Virgin, Qantas. Also, I think you worked with The Rocks, with Taronga Zoo. How would you place Tourism New South Wales in terms of brand strength?
Brand strength, absolutely, is very strong, and it's probably still the strongest in the country. But from a strategic point of view, Sydney is not changing fast enough. You know, we're still hanging back since the Olympic Games, and we are just not changing as a city. And that, to me, is our key problem. And unless we make some major changes, we are going to struggle to keep getting visitors coming to this city. There's more happening in Melbourne and there's more happening in Brisbane than there is in Sydney. So, you know, and the amount of times in Sydney where it's same old, year after year after year, is of great concern. And I think the state government should really focus on getting that right.
What do you think of this sort of almost calendar strategy they've got where, you know, for instance, we're in Vivid Sydney at the moment, this idea of celebrating Sydney's creativity and bringing people in through events and stuff. Is that a solid strategy?
Oh, absolutely. It's a very solid, but it's not happening enough. And I think that's what the key issue is here.
Robin, your take on the ads?
Oh, the ads. Yeah, no, I like the line, "That's so Sydney." I think that works really well. I've been in the city almost 100 days now, 96 days today. And thank you very much. Yeah, and I've heard that line at least 10 times from friends, people have interviewed. In fact, you guys, I'm sure you guys have used that before, "That's so Sydney," to sum up what Sydney is. But the ads themselves left me a bit flat. I didn't feel that they had the zip or sparkle that a tourism ad needs.
Well, next, celebrity endorsements. Do you dare?
While on the topic of celebrities and TV commercials, the one that garnered the most attention this week is actress Cate Blanchett's appearance in an ad explaining the proposed carbon tax. She joins actor Michael Caton of The Castle and Pact of the Rafters fame and other Australians. Let's listen.
What if we say yes to making big companies pay when they pollute our skies?
We'd be saying yes to less carbon pollution.
Yes to new money for clean energy that never runs out.
Yes to help for people struggling with bills.
Yes to jobs.
Yes to better health for our kids.
And finally, doing something about climate change.
So let's say yes, Australia, because yes is what makes this country great.
Critics have suggested that because she is a wealthy woman, she will not feel the effects of the tax. As you may have noticed, they don't actually mention the word tax in the ad. So, Tim, do you think she was a good choice? And do you think that the criticism was unfair?
I guess, I mean, personally for me, it felt that the choice of Cate Blanchett meant that the conversation moved in a very different direction. You know, and obviously a lot of it was about talkback radio. It was about sort of relatively right-leaning press on this particular issue, or certainly white right-leaning commentators. So it's one of those things that you think, well, were they expecting it? Had they reasonably thought of it? You know, this hypocrisy charge, you know, fairly or unfairly, it's taken the conversation in that direction. So for that reason, it felt to me like maybe the wrong choice because, you know, it's diverted the course of the conversation. he's put it on the agenda all week. So, you know, arguably from that point of view, it's worked. But to me, I wouldn't be happy if I'd been running that strategy with the direction it went.
Yes. Hans, what do you think generally about celebrity endorsements? Woolworths, a client of yours, has used Margaret Fulton recently. What were your thoughts on Kate Blanchett and her use in this?
I thought it was a brilliant move. And for one, I believe that every Australian has the right, whether they are celebrities or not, to speak up about what's going on with the carbon tax. I'd wish that more prominent Australians would do it, because it is really clear to me that the Australian government alone cannot do it. There is still so much confusion out there between what we are actually talking about. And I heard this comment the other day. Do you know the difference between an emission scheme and a carbon tax? I have no idea. And the government has failed in one or two lines to explain what it is we are talking about here. And that, to me, is the key issue. And unless that happens and everyone in Australia understands, the opposition will try and block everything, because as a nation, we're not getting it. And I think it's fantastic that Kate stood up and said, this is what I believe in. And she has the right, as much as Tony Abbott or Julia Gillard, to talk about the issue.
Yes. I had a chat with Day Levine, who's head of communications at Greenpeace, one of the 9 organisations behind the Say Yes Australia campaign. Yeah. Yeah. She said, she admitted, if there was a weakness, it was the fact that the ad led to even more confusion than there was before the ad was aired. In fact, they're going to have to spend more money. They've spent about $1 million already on a follow-up campaign specifically focused on trying to explain what it is the carbon tax is. I think also the ad perhaps fell apart, that there was 9 different organisations, 9 different clients behind it. So it's sort of advertising by committee, which led to perhaps the confusion that we saw in the ad.
It is. The more people involved, the worse it gets.
Yes.
Always. Yeah.
Next, Kellogg's and Zugi's new twist on Twitter.
With more than 94.5 million active users globally, eBay is the world's largest online marketplace. Visit advertise.ebay.com.au.
So cereal brand Kellogg's has commenced the search for a PR agency and has decided to use Twitter as part of the hunt. They're asking agencies to tweet, in, of course, 140 characters or less, why they should win the business. If you're interested, the hashtag is Kellogg's PR, and there's a lot to be seen if you do go onto Twitter, take a look at it this week. Robert, what do you think? Does this give away something about the agency's approach, if they have to go onto Twitter to do it, do you think?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think it's a great idea. It's an open pitch. In fact, Alice and I, we had a look at me in the Twitter stream earlier on.
I noticed that liquid ideas were dominating the conversation, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And I see your point about exposing your ideas, sort of giving away for free to basically anyone who wants to look at them. But yeah, they're PR agencies. They're experts in exposure, so they should be exposed during the pitch process. I don't see why it's a bad idea at all.
And Hans, do you like a nice traditional pitch?
No. I think that I agree, it's absolutely brilliant the way they've done it. And the reason is that basically a PR company has 5 seconds to cut through. That's usually what happens, okay? So therefore, minimal words needs to have maximum impact from a PR point of view, okay? This will draw that out very quickly. So therefore, and because social networking is the future anyway, I think it's absolutely a brilliant move.
And still with social media, travel brand Zugi has also been talked about this week for being what we think is the first local brand to use promoted tweets. That's when you search Twitter on a phrase, whether airfare or cheap flight or holiday, then at the top of the results you'll see a tweet from Zugi appear, linking through to their own site with messages about their deals. I guess it becomes almost an interruptive form of advertising, Hans, you know, when you're seeing the promoted things. Do you have a view on the role of social media in a kind of wider marketing mix?
Yes, absolutely. And why not? You know, it's just the way we live today. We are bombarded with messages and images and anyway, and that side is no different. So it's, you know, I've got no objection or a view on it. It's just the way, you know, the way we live today.
And Alice, this is a travel brand that's doing it. Wearing a consumer hat, would you be more likely to click on a link or less likely to click on a link when you see that it's a paid promoted tweet?
I think with travel, I mean, people are looking for information. If I'm going to search a particular phrase on Twitter, cheap flight, Spain, whatever, I'm looking for information because I'm looking to buy a flight if I look for cheap flight on Twitter. So the fact that they've got that there, it's handy. I might click on it and great. It's not going to annoy me because it's actually helping me. It's not as if I'm tweeting about Michael Jackson and Zuji comes up and says, "Fancy going to Harlem?" Like it's not, you know, it's completely relevant to what I'm searching for.
Next, Achel's homophobia drama.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au. The first day of June wasn't so kind to outdoor company Adshell, as it quickly became a social media case study for all the wrong reasons. The ad at the centre of attention featured a photo of two men hugging and a safe sex message. One of them was holding a condom. Adshell, in what they claim was a response to multiple complaints, took down the bus shelter ads. It later emerged that the Australian Christian lobby had allegedly organised the complaints, and after a film protest and widespread accusations of homophobia, Adshell promised to put the ads back up. So, Tim, fascinating story that unfolded in front of us yesterday. What did you make of it?
Well, absolutely classic social media case study. But also a story that has been and gone in the space of 24 hours. You know, we went from someone creating a Facebook page in protest to 60,000 people joining that group, absolutely dominating the conversation on Twitter all day. At one stage, of the top 10 most trending topics on Twitter in Australia, six of them were related to this story, with versions of Adshell and ACL and Rip and Roll, which was the name of the campaign, and various things. I think the one point to make is it may well have been idiotic for Adshell to react like they did with the knee-jerk reaction, taking them down. I don't think it makes them bigots, though, which is what some people have been suggesting. You know, they were reacting to what they perceived to be a concern. They were foolish. They were knee-jerk. I suspect they panicked.
You mentioned in your comment piece, your opinion piece on Umbrella, that you suspect that they panicked at one point.
It felt like that, certainly. It was just reacting to all of these complaints. And, of course, what it comes against, though, is this backdrop of the outdoor industry is terrified of having regulation forced on it by the government. So the industry runs on self-regulation. And this key phrase that we're hearing a lot is community appropriateness. One of the priorities for the Outdoor Media Association in the coming months is creative appropriateness. And a lot of this is around, you know, parents not wanting their children to be exposed to, you know, particular messages outside schools.
But it's just a couple of guys hugging.
Exactly. So this wasn't that example. You know, it's more like things like the Australian Medical Institute's Want Longer Lasting Sex ads, which were banned in the end, but by the Ad Standards Board. And probably Adshell reacted to this themselves. They didn't wait for a ruling, which I'm sure they wish now they did. I think they were just super paranoid about reacting to community concern and hadn't, ahead of seeing this campaign, and were ready to react whenever there's community concern about anything, didn't think this one through properly. Don't think it makes them evil. Don't think it makes them bigots. Don't think they actually took a moral stance on it. I think they just stupidly caved in when they thought they were getting a lot of letters.
Yeah, I tell you who I think it does make look bad is the Australian Christian lobby. But Alice, were you offended by an ad of two guys hugging?
Oh my God, no. Look, when I overheard you and Tim speaking about it in the office when the story first emerged, I thought that it must be they must be naked, or it must be quite raunchy, the ad. And then when I actually saw it on the story, I was just I laughed because I thought, I can't believe this is what it's all about. homosexuality is a part of everyday life now, and people have to get used to it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, agreed. Next, the week in TV.
Australia's Got Talent reached its semi-finals with something of a bang on Tuesday night, with a monster audience of 1.9 million for the first of the semi-finals. Considering it was up against MasterChef for the first half an hour, from 7.30 to 8, and then continued on for another hour, then that was quite a feat, getting the average across the whole 90 minutes. Meanwhile, Nine's had another tough week, continuing to lag with Eddie Maguire's Between the Lines, which was the quiz that was in prime time, being beaten by his own early evening game show, Hot Seat, on Thursday, and since being dropped from the schedule. We've also seen Nine bring back Mike and Molly, the comedy there, and immediately hit the doldrums. Also, getting a bit slow for the ABC with Angry Boys as well. Chris Lilley, you know, debuted really well, you know, around about the 1.6 million mark, if I remember rightly, but down to 920,000 on Wednesday night for the fourth episode, although slightly up against State of Origin from the week before. So lots going on in the TV schedule, but Seven dominating. Hans, are you much of a TV watcher? What are your TV choices?
Well,
I have you down as a bit of an SBS and ABC sort of person.
No. I don't have a lot of time to watch TV. I'm usually working. But I think that the Channel 7 and the shows they have, I mean, it's the ultimate form of entertainment, because it's really about people like you and me. And it's kind of like a celebration of who we are as a people. And I think that's just really very clever. You know, it's just people like you and me standing up there and enjoying themselves, and it's good watching. You know, it's great to watch. So often, you know, the other channels run American cop shows, and you could never get involved on an emotional level, which you can with all these fabulous shows they have about us Australians, and it's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
And Robin, your take on the week's TV?
Well, yeah, no, I wrote the rating story just before we came up to the podcast. Yeah, I noticed that it's another bad showing for Nine. It does seem that it's almost repetitive. I'm just wondering whether perhaps you think their luck will change. It does seem that we've written a story so many times about another night of Nine not managing to make a show that's over a million viewers.
And another Seven ratings hit, you know, because of course they also had Downton Abbey, which was from the UK, the kind of period drama, rated incredibly well as well, nearly hit 2 million for Seven, which, again, it felt like a risk, you know, prime time, you run sort of, you know, the modern version of Upstairs, Downstairs, I suppose. But you know, a big hit, which suggests that that they've got the momentum. But as you say, you know, sometimes a single show can change the fortunes. For instance, for Nine, they've said they're going to be stripping the block, so that's going to be five nights a week when it comes back. If that's a hit, then they're sorted for the second half of the year, or at least they're stabilised for the second half of the year. But if it's not, obviously their problem just gets worse, and they're running out of weapons in the armoury. You know, the Big Bang Theory is almost spent now. Two and a Half Men is gone. You know, there's not much else left. Now, just finally before we go, just one more to squeeze in. Nando's and the Sphere Agency have parted company after a relatively long relationship. I think it was about 8 years. Robin, I always find them a really interesting advertiser, just because they used to do lots of tactical stuff. So it was quite interesting, the strategy anyway, you know, lots of very, very short turnaround radio, print ads for the next day when there was a news event or something, they come up with a funny thing. So that was interesting. But the other thing was, how nice about each other they were in the divorce announcement.
Yeah, it was strange, wasn't it? There seems to, as we were talking earlier on, there seems to be a trend of agencies declaring the business that they've just lost via a press release. So, yeah, I think you're saying that it's the agency controlling the story before we as journalists get hold of it and alter the slant of it. Hans, you said you're also interested in this story. What did you make of the Nando's, the Sphere Agency split?
Well, for me, reading between the lines, there's obviously an issue with the relationship between the client and the agency. And so they're brilliant ads and what they've done, but it's not always about that. It's not always about the quality of the work, you know. First of all, it's always about the relationship. And somehow what I can read is that that balance has shifted. You know, either there are new people at Nando's or there are new people at the agency. Suddenly they can't work together. Obviously there is an issue there and the reason for the split.
But 8 years is a long time, isn't it? You'd think that legacy, that relationship was strong enough over time, you know, despite who's working on the brand.
I've worked with Qantas for 20 years. And before Royal Caribbean, I worked for P&O for 20 years. Wow. Major client changes, new CEOs. It's all about the relationship.
Right.
And
right.
The other thing is, it's always about delivering.
Right.
It's not about arrogance. It's not about because you're only as good as your last job. Mm. So it's always about delivering, but the relationship. And if there's new people coming in, you need to rebuild that relationship. If you're not prepared to do it and say the advertising is good enough, so the relationship's not important, wrong, because you see what happens.
Yeah. Well, that is all we have time for today. A big thank you to our guest, Hans.
Thank you.
And to Mumbrella's Robin Hicks.
Cheers, Tim.
And to our producer, Alice Terlikowski.
Thanks, Tim.
The Mumbrella cast was recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Hopefully we'll see you at Mumbrella 360 next week. We'll be podcasting from there. For now, though, toodle-pip.